This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Quickly becoming my favorite part of the show, and not because it's the start to the final hour and I look ahead to the drive home and maybe a couple Miller Lights or... Ever have a dirty Shirley, Ted?
I have not. I've not had a dirty Shirley. What's in it?
I don't know. I bought it in a can. It came like pre-concocted.
Okay.
It's a dirty Shirley Temple, basically. An alcohol version.
Who doesn't love
Shirley Temples? I love them. My kids go through those like they are candy. Everybody. They are so good. They make them at home.
Fair or foul, a 50-year-old getting a Shirley Temple.
Oh, that's fine.
Fair.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Fair. I say fair. But it has to be like lunch. You can't be out with the fellas, you know what I mean, at a bar, and then you grab like a Shirley.
Yeah. Why are you judging him? Why can't he get a Shirley?
Huh. Okay.
I mean, you order a Sprite anyway, so you're halfway there.
Right.
Isn't it Sprite and grenadine or something?
It's ginger ale.
Ginger ale and grenadine.
Yeah.
With a cherry. Don't forget the cherry.
The cherry goes with it. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Got to get the good one. The maraschino.
Yeah.
But, so I had those last night instead of Miller Lights. I'm a sucker for a gimmick. Anytime I walk through the liquor store, if there's something that's like, ooh, what's that? I buy like the six-pack.
A dirty Shirley Temple wearing your Jalen Brown jersey. How about that?
And his Hey Dude. Don't forget the Hey Dudes.
Wearing your Hey Dudes.
Well, you know what's left tonight from the variety pack? Those were just dirty Shirleys. Tonight is left the extra dirty Shirley.
Oh, boy. Somebody's fighting on Twitter tonight.
It's got 12.9% alcohol.
Watch out.
Sounds like Mrs. Hart's going to be going to bed early.
More like I'll be passed out early on the couch because that's like four Miller Lights if I drink one of those things. But it is 5 o'clock. You're getting in your car. You're not having a dirty Shirley. You're having a regular Shirley before you go on your ride home. It's time for the 5 o'clock drive.
This is The Drive.
Swings and drives one. High and deep.
Top stories, stats, and quotes from around the sports world for your ride home. On WEEI Afternoons.
I'm going to assume this top text is in response to the question I just asked Ted. Have you ever had a dirty Shirley? I did once, and I had to see the doctor.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. I thought you might take it in that direction as well. In your early playing days or something, that might go down that road. But it is 5 o'clock.
It wasn't Shirley.
Shirley, you can't be serious.
It was dirty Cindy.
Shirley, you can't be.
All right.
Close. Starts with an S.
Why don't you go ahead and play the music again and we'll start the hour over.
So, tough loss for the Red Sox last night. They load the bases three times, three consecutive innings, including the first time when they had the bases loaded with no outs and then subsequently struck out one, two, three times in a row to a guy who has been on three different franchises, four different teams this year, has been cut by everybody and made you look silly, and then marched off the mound at Fenway Park, your house, with some weird crossed arms celebration, hooting and hollering. Ted Johnson, how do you feel about a Red Sox loss that included a one-run loss, an extra inning loss? Oh, and we'll get to it in a minute, some base running controversy. How's that feel?
Yeah, that was a gut punch. That was kind of just the teams felt like it just hasn't been playing that good lately. Only winning, you know, two out of the last nine games, and then so they haven't been good. The hitting's been down. Like I said, I mentioned earlier, the team as a whole hitting at .228 in the last 10 games, and we know what the relief pitching is looked like. So it hasn't been good, and to lose that game with opportunities like they had is, a lot of the stuff that was plaguing this team in the first 2 months when they couldn't get out of their .500 hole is rearing their heads. I mean, the bullpen falling apart, not being able to drive runners in when you have guys on base. That to me, what an awesome day, raising all this money, and you think the stadium is just electric. And they've had 16 consecutive sellouts right now. But they were even mentioned on the broadcast that a little bit of the buzz has kind of wavered recently. And you have all this chance to maybe kind of get everybody back on track. And that's what you do. You strike out three times when there's a guy right there 90 feet from home base.
I hadn't even thought about that, Fitzy. Ted brings up, so we had the Jimmy Fund telethon. They're announcing on the massive screen in center field, new record at the time. I think it was like 5.3 million. It was still chugging along.
Good vibes everywhere.
Then you even had the new guy. scrap heap guy, Nathaniel Lowe, hits a bomb, ties the ball game. Mm-hmm. Chapman's up. Like, everything is coming together. And then Fitzy, they decide that Nick Eaton's on third. And, well, let's hear Alex Cora's description of why Nick Eaton didn't tag up, as everybody, including our own Will Fleming, thought he was going to.
On that play, there was Eaton at third.
That doesn't impact our arm in center field. We prepare before the series, and we decide who we're going to challenge or not. So we didn't challenge him.
Is there any Eaton's call to stop, or is Hudson telling him?
We prepare before the series, and that's an impact arm, and we decided not to challenge him.
Spicy.
Oh, my. I missed it the first time. I was giving them credit for they made the decision at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Excuse me.
Before
they
the series.
They made the decision before the series that if we got into that situation, we weren't going to challenge an impact arm. Hate it. Hate it.
Why? Keep going. Yeah.
Because games have feels and flows and situations. And I said to Fitzy, you earlier, in that situation, we're at Fenway. Nathaniel Lowe hit a home run. The lights were flashing. There's some buzz in the air. And that's a difficult play to make. Even if the guy is in, I don't care, the 95th percentile for whatever the hell Dan Ball told me he was in the 95th percentile for.
He was.
Yep. You have a fast runner on third base. Make him make a play. Make him make a throw. Make him make a good throw and a good catch, and don't block the plate, and don't do anything that could end up being the game-tying run. And they decided 2 days earlier that they weren't going to do that? I could not hate that anymore, Fitzy.
That's the what's so frustrating about it is that it takes away that thing that we love so much about Alex Cora, Andy, which is the whole realizing what's at stake in the moment, managing with your gut, getting a feel for what's at stake. And the advanced analytics taking over, like that just gives us all of those like nerds are running FSG, nerds are ruining the game, Brezbot type of approach, as opposed to like you have Alex Cora on the bench for a reason. Alex Cora makes those in-game decisions. You know what? I got to go against the numbers right now. You want to know why? Because my team needs a run. We need a big play right here. We have to tie this game up because we just screwed the pooch. 1, 2, 3 innings in a row with the bases loaded. I hate it.
I also hate, Ted, that it takes out the, you've said this earlier in the year, situational baseball.
Yeah.
So if your guy Bregman was on third,
yep,
and he's still nursing the quad and not at his full speed, okay, maybe that's a different conversation. You have the fastest guy on your team, one of the fastest players in baseball on third. Yep. Doesn't that play into the equation?
Should. It should. And it, you know what? It should. It you know, these – I was just looking. It just hit me. There's a lot around this, that one issue. Just, you know, Nate Eaton on third, it's, you know, basically a 265-foot fly ball in the center field. Does he tag up or not? There's a lot that is goes into that. But let me just – you know, I look at these analysts. Got to justify their job somehow. Like, there's – they employ the Red Sox. I just did a really quick little Google search. I don't know if this is true exactly, but you know, it's probably not too far off. 33 analysts they employ.
That sounds low.
I feel like there's a lot more.
Yeah.
Okay. How many coaches do they employ? 13. So, like, there's three times as many analysts than there are coaches employed by the Red Sox. And again, I think 33 is low.
It does sound low.
And they gotta justify their. So they gotta be. You gotta pay these guys to come up. Now that there's no trade deadlines, what do? They come up with like things like this. Okay, the guy's got a strong arm going into into the series. And so no matter what the situation is, don't ever challenge him. Are you kidding? You know how many guys he's thrown out from center field this year?
Six.
One.
Oh.
He has thrown out one guy.
And we saw why. Did you see the throw?
Yes. Who cares how strong the arm is if he can't hit home plate?
He threw it to his manager practically. It was headed straight for the dugout. Wow, that makes me even more angry that he's thrown out one guy. But he's an impact arm, according to their scouting report and their pre-series meetings. Now, there is the theory, and Dan Ball sort of voiced this earlier, that maybe that's not true. Maybe they're covering for Kyle Hudson, the third base coach.
Well, I think he were a little
Eaton.
Bit.
Well, he definitely... Cora got defensive on the follow-up. The follow-up there, he got defensive. And whenever somebody repeats themselves like that and basically says, we're not talking about this, this answer I just gave you is the only answer you get.
Did you get the sense that he was throwing the analytics people under the bus?
No.
I didn't either.
No.
Because he answered it so quick.
I'm throwing the analytics people under the bus. I think you are.
And I am, too. Well,
yeah. But I don't think he was.
I don't think Cora was.
No.
I think he was covering for Kyle Hudson.
I also just think you're the manager. Even if that's true, that the pre-series meeting scouting report overrule them in the situation.
Yeah.
There's a reason you're paid $7
million. You've left 13
a year.
Guys on base. Like, what makes you think, even if it's Alex Bregman coming up, that he's going to get the guy in?
to be fair, you were only 0 for 12 at that point.
Over 12.
The 13th would come, and that's how the game ends. Correct. And you lose because you gave up the opportunity.
That game sucks so bad. Oh, my God.
Worst loss of the year.
When these teams make decisions before the game even starts, what they're going to do in any situation is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Basketball does it. Yeah. Baseball does it.
It's the analytics, though.
Football does it.
It's the analytics. It was the Rays basically losing a World Series because it said don't pitch Blake Snell and you can fill in the third time through the order, blah, blah. Like, whoa, we're making decisions before we even see what's going on in the situation because this little number on this little screen. I think it's the worst thing that's happened to sports.
I tend to agree. Do you think Alex Cora minds it?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm not so sure.
Really?
Because it takes the pressure off of Alex Cora. Hey, you know what? They're upstairs. They called it. You know what? There's no pressure on the manager to make any in-game decisions ever because it's all predetermined. It's the easiest job ever. Well, all you got to do is what they tell you to do.
I would argue it just moves the pressure to a different time. Instead of the pressure coming in the game, it's answering for the stupid thing you did in the game post-game. And you have to get defensive.
I'll make $7 million to do that.
And maybe that's what he's doing. That wasn't the only issue. There were a lot of issues. As we said, 0 for 13 with runners in scoring position. But there was also the issue of Walker Buehler, who didn't exactly have his best stuff, and he was asked about it post-game.
Walks being, the key for you right now.
Yeah, it's embarrassing, man. I think the last time I walked this many in a season, I threw 207 innings. So, it just sucks.
Walker Buehler went 4-plus innings, gave up 4 hits, 4 walks, and in case you didn't hear it there, he said it's effing embarrassing. That's a very good bleep.
Yeah, it's embarrassing, man.
Yeah, it makes it sound like he just says embarrassing. No. Yeah. He dropped an F-bomb there. This is the Walker Buehler that's been questioning his own existence for 2.5 months now, the same time
just
period.
Six poor guy. Here in Red Sox or just on the planet?
In baseball. No, everything. He's in a bad place.
Well, you know what? I'm guessing he called Chris Sale and said, hey, how do you handle it when you suck at pitching here?
Right. Just take him head on.
Just tell him how bad you suck. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It is endearing, but there is a point in which, okay, this is the 9th straight game that he has not gone more than 5 innings.
Yeah.
9 straight games.
It's weird. The bullpen gets taxed when you have a starter who's not helping the guy out. I did use this sort of as our jumping off point poll for the day because last night's game had a bunch of reasons for concern, which area you think is kind of reason for the loss. So at Jumbo Heart, at WEEI Afternoons, I said, what aspect of the Red Sox concerns you most in the current struggles? I said timely hitting.
That's what I voted on.
Starting pitching depth or non-Chapman bullpen? Those were the three options I gave Fitzy. Ted just told you he voted for timely hitting. What would you vote for, Fitzy?
Considering that a single hit last night could have flipped the entire script and table, I'm going to go with the same.
Yeah, that's winning, and I do think a little bit of his recency bias. The most annoying part of last night's game was the inability to get a hit when you needed a hit. So that has 47% of the vote.
I was gonna go like 51, 52, so almost a majority.
But you also have a strong 42% voting for the non-Chapman bullpen.
Yeah, if you asked over the weekend, that would have been winning hand right now.
Those people like missed last night's game and were thinking back to the weekend, and that's why they're doing their voting. And then only 11% would say it's effing embarrassing, the pitching depth that they're putting out there. Starting pitching depth, not as big a concern as I thought it might be. Those guys have been inconsistent at best, but certainly in the light of what has gone on most recently, the bullpen and the lineup.
I hope these games aren't just don't, because, now they're bringing up Brandon Bernardino. Now they're bringing up Richard Fitz.
Yep.
It's like, okay, you couldn't have brought him up a little bit sooner than this because, every game matters now.
Every
game matters now.
Did you guys see that Toley, in his second start, went 5 innings, gave up a couple hits, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, 99 on the gun regularly?
Yeah, 99. Can't hit 100. Hey, what a wuss.
You need some. God, they're going to need something, man. They like bring him up.
Oh, we're going to see him. Actually, let's jump ahead. I had a little rundown here, but let's jump ahead. We asked Craig Breslow about that yesterday, and I think his answer is enlightening. I definitely think they're going to put something on Peyton Toley's big old broad shoulders sooner rather than later.
But I keep hearing
good things about how Kyle Harrison is pitching, and people keep telling me, like, you're going to want to see this Tolley kid come up and join the Sox because he's something else. Anything you could shed or as far as those guys go?
Yeah, you know I mentioned guys that we have in the upper levels of the minor leagues, and I think depth, particularly on the pitching side, that maybe we haven't had in a couple of years, and you know, if needed, feel like they'd be able to step in and give our team a boost. Exactly what that timing looks like and what the roles that they might be stepping into, I think, is to be determined. But tonight we've got Walker starting, and you know, the last one wasn't as clean as the one before, and he was great in San Diego. He was great against Philadelphia, and in those playoff environments, we've seen him at his best. So you know, we're looking forward to what he's going to bring tonight.
Do you do that? Do you look back to the trade deadline and say what coulda, shoulda, even if it's in the shower, or, I don't know, regret after the game, the ride home?
Okay.
There you go.
Jeez, just grill. Stop button.
Do you just sit there and look at yourself in the mirror and just hate yourself for things you didn't do at the trade deadline?
Yeah, no, we'll get into that a little bit. I mean, just it's an honest question.
Hey,
I
also, Breslow, you're at a crossroads in your career.
That actually
would have been. You consider yourself the Cole Strange awesome. Of the front office?
That would have been awesome.
Hey, Breslow, you're at the crossroads.
Is this potential postseason run the crossroads of your career? That would have been tremendous. I don't think that would have gotten laughs, but
he didn't. He never answered Fitzy's question, of course.
Not really. No, just, I mean, I feel like
he tiptoed around the whole thing. I thought I
never answered it
without being super direct and just being like, when am I going to see Harrison and Tolley, damn it?
Yeah, I was going to say, Stiz, I asked you to play the actual Craig Breslow, not the Brezbot version that you concocted in your little laboratory back there, because there were a lot of words there that didn't really
fulfill
the requirements of an answer. Patriots. We do need to talk a little Patriots here in the drive. I know you wanted to hear this, Ted. Your boy, Phil Perry. I wouldn't say he's totally on board with the year two jump for Drake May based on what he's seen in recent weeks.
Some of his best practices this year were those two practices in Minnesota, in my opinion. You know, is he progressing? Is he regressing? He's still in his early 20s, about to be 23 years old. It's really difficult to say anything in terms of this is like a linear progression. It's going to be dips and dives, and there are going to be peaks and valleys, Kayla. And I think today was actually, you know, he's kind of getting back on the upswing after a couple of down days.
So the word regression is not good. And I think he's using it compared to like a previous week, from week to week regression, not a year one to year two regression, just to clarify there. I don't want to speak for him, but I think that's kind of the implication he was giving. But are there more and more people starting to worry a little bit more about Drake May?
I think so.
Yeah.
Warranted? I think so. Yeah. And Phil and I are both kind of on the same page with him. Phil's been out there every single day. I haven't been, clearly, but we both just thought he's oodles of talent, unbelievable ability, but you felt like, man, in OTAs and training camp, you would see a signs that he's going to have a big second. Most guys improve from their first year to their second year. The most they improve of all their years in their career is usually between years one and two. And they're not seeing it, and it's making them nervous, right? Rightfully so.
Yep, and Fitzy, we thought we were seeing it early on because if you remember, the big story was OTAs. Oh, my God, he threw four interceptions. And then early in training camp, it was no interceptions. And so that was
Bring
like,
it up.
Right.
Oh, nice, that's linear. That's development. Yep. That's going in the right direction. Yep. And then we got to in-stadium practice turnover. We got to game practice, game turnover. And now it feels like Phil's R word, the regression there, it's apt right now.
But he still hasn't, like, this is why people need to, like, ratchet down their expectations for Drake May this year.
Why?
He still hasn't completed a full season. He played 11 games last year. He has so much more to learn. Ted, I think he's got a head full of McDaniels every day, every night, and I think it's going to take him weeks to become comfortable with an offensive line that maybe has three starters settled just less than 3 weeks away from kickoff, a wide receiver room where you've got Steph Diggs and you don't even know who your 2 through 5 at this point is. There are so many different issues that are unsettled. I think it's going to take, this is why my whole party line has been, I don't think you're going to have a real idea what Drake May is going to be all about in his second season until you get to the middle of October. It's going to take him so long to like settle down and settle in to what's around him and what's being taught to him.
I just feel like we would see more signs. That's all. I think it's fair to ask or to expect people to want to have seen more at this point. I'm not saying You know, he's got to be what Jaden Daniels was last year. I'm just saying, I want to see definite improvement from what we saw last year. And I've seen some, I've heard some, but I haven't heard enough to get me excited that when October comes, we're going to be seeing a totally different player.
All right, you just got a little taste of it, but up next we are going to play a little bit more Craig Breslow. We had the opportunity to talk to him. I didn't think I asked him if his career was at a crossroads, but maybe you'll look at the question I asked a little bit differently. Craig Breslow joined us yesterday at the Jimmy Fund Telethon. We'll hear a couple of the more interesting questions and answers up next here on WEEI Afternoons. But for the final time today, here's Dan Ball with What's Trending.
You can listen to WEEI on your smart speaker.
Just say, play 93.7 WEEI.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
WEEI Afternoons, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, Ted Johnson. And we just played you a little snippet earlier of our interview with Red Sox Chief Baseball Officer Craig Breslow. But there's a little bit more meat on that bone from yesterday from the Jimmy Fund Telethon. And one of the questions, which apparently was controversial with Ted, because he thought I was asking career crossroads questions again, was sort of at the end of the interview, which I did there. We kind of pussyfooted through it for a little bit before we got to the meat and potatoes, asking him if, like the rest of us, he looks back on the trade deadline as the ebbs and flows of the season unfold with maybe some doubt or regret.
You know how sports talk radio works. We have.
You told me you guys were an easy audience. Hold on.
We have.
Here it comes.
Well, it's gone well so far, right?
Yeah, here it comes. Here it comes. No, you know, we have 4 hours every day, and we watch a baseball game, and we react to it. And part of the reaction from us or the fan base might be looking back to the trade deadline, what coulda, shoulda, woulda happened there. Do you do that? Do you look back to the trade deadline and say what coulda, shoulda, even if it's in the shower, or, I don't know, regret after the game, the ride home, do you look back and look at it a certain way?
Well, I think it's natural to replay decisions and right. opportunities and think about how you may have approached them differently. And that's not to say that you aren't also happy with an outcome, right?
Right.
We've got Dustin Main, you know, you said he's two really good starts in back-to-back outings, and Steven Matz has been really good for us out of the pen. But of course, you kind of play these situations out and you think about, you know, what you could have done differently. And maybe sometimes the answer is nothing. But other times, you hope that there's something that you can learn so that when you're in this position again, you can achieve the desired outcome there.
Way to make it weird, Andy.
Why is it
awkward?
Weird? Okay. So first, let's set before we get to the actual answer. I am a big believer. I know for myself personally, the two places I think the most are in the shower or in the car. Those are the two places I think the most because I'm sort of by my... Oh, yeah. Let me add a third.
I was going to say.
Lawnmower.
The dumper. Oh.
No. Okay. No, because usually I'm on my phone and I'm distracted. When I'm in the shower, I don't have a phone. So I'm just like focused on scrubbing my head. And while I'm scrubbing... Stiz, why are you looking at me weird like I don't have a phone in the shower? Like,
even if it's in the shower.
Yeah, everybody thinks in the shower.
I put the phone in the shower all the time.
Wait, I've heard people do this and what? I'm like, wait, really?
What do you mean you put the phone in the shower? Like to watch, to listen?
To listen.
What do you listen to?
I listen to the shows.
Really? Now, wait, Ted, is your phone legit in
the
shower?
My phone is in the shower, yes.
I have like a Bluetooth speaker,
next
so my phone's
the,
like on the sink.
Next, it's right next to the shampoo.
So you're listening to like the Greg Hill show or
yep.
Jones and Keefe in the shower.
Yes, I am.
That's not weird, boys. He's showering time. With Jones and Keefe.
No, you want to know why? Because he didn't ask the question in the middle of the Jimmy Fund radio telethon in front of 50 people.
Even if it's in the shower.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we all realized I don't really have a filter sometimes.
I like after you asked him about regretting decisions you made at the trade deadline, and he gives you, well, Steven Matz and Dustin May are doing pretty good.
Right. Well, he wanted to say, not that it means you regret the decision you made, but everybody naturally thinks about it. No, usually when you spend a lot of time on it, it's because you regret the decision.
If he was given an honest answer, he'd probably say, you know what? If he really gives get it, he would say, yeah, I screwed this trade deadline up.
Absolutely.
I overplayed my hand. I was too confident. And I have a lot to learn because I could have gotten Joe Ryan, and I didn't. I will learn from my mistake and do better next time.
Well, it's natural.
It's at this career crossroads of mine that I'm in. Fitzy.
Career crossroads.
But it's a fluid situation. Like the previous answer we played, if they bring up Peyton Tolley, and let's just say Peyton Tolley makes like 7 appearances out of the bullpen, has an ERA of 0.3, is striking people out, and we're like, oh,
talk to me. Yeah.
Maybe it's a good thing that he didn't include him in a trade for Joe Ryan, and that helps them secure the top wild card spot, and they go on to do whatever they do. So, like, this come, you know, there's a timeline here of maybe regret. Yep. Oh, now I'm happy I didn't do it. So I'm not, Fitzy, I'm not closing the door on the trade deadline. We have to wait till the end of the season to really assess what happens, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, could Peyton Tolley knock in a base runner or get a hit with the bases loaded in three consecutive innings last night? They did nothing to it. Literally did nothing to address the offense at the trade deadline. Nothing. Well, Abraham Toro's batting like 120 over the past month. You're running out guys that are just cooked, done, and have outplayed their service time this year. There's a reason why they're super subs and fill-ins, and we're grateful for everything they contributed. But like, you can't literally go against the Yankees or then try to expect to be a serious playoff contender with Romy Gonzalez and Abraham Toro in your lineup, can you?
It is kind of funny that you're about to kick off a series with the Yankees coming off 9 home runs where on any given night, Stanton could hit 2, Judge could hit 2, they could hit 5 between them, and you're like, yeah.
Goldschmidt will be mashing. Why not?
Yoshida hits the ball past the infield every once in a while as our DH. But another question we asked Craig Breslow was, with the trade deadline in the rearview mirror, and just a refresher, we no longer have those days of the waiver wire trade deadline, right, which actually used to be a thing.
I miss those.
I kind of miss those, too.
I do, too.
That's how that big Josh Beckett, not Adrian Gonzalez, Josh Beckett trade ended up happening with the Dodgers.
Yeah, bring that back. Why did they get rid of that?
That's how my Astros got Verlander.
Yeah.
Like, went in 17.
Oh, that's right.
I don't know why they got rid of that.
Franchise saver that trade was.
Either push the trade deadline back a little bit naturally or bring the waiver, something, do that. But anyway, we asked him, what can be done? Are there still moves and things that can be done to help this Red Sox baseball team?
How much work is there to be done, even on your part? I know the trade deadline has passed, but how does that work come about for you over the next month plus?
Yeah, a few things. So, right, we're constrained in terms of how we can add players given that the deadline has passed, but we feel like we've got a deep farm system and there are guys at the upper levels that are capable of helping us down the stretch. So we want to make sure that we're optimizing the roster, that our bullpen is always fresh, that if we're going to face a string of left-handed pitchers, we've got right-handed bats that are ready to step in. And so, you know, I think there's work to do from that regard to make sure that we're giving Alex and the team as many fresh pieces as we possibly can, as many like versatile and flexible pieces as we can to give ourselves the best chance of winning. And then there's support that we can offer in terms of information and advance reports. And, you know, we're not going to be able to make wholesale changes to the roster or to players right now, but we can do everything possible to support them.
Words.
Oh my God. I got a headache listening to that.
Give Alex information on the center fielder for your
opponent. So don't run on him.
That's basically what there's
100%.
They're scouting the opponent and telling, you know, Alex what to do before the series even starts. In any situation, here's what a game plan before games even get started.
And the beginning part of that, though, was a little bit of, well, since I didn't make any trades, the farm system's still really deep, so I got some guys I can bring up, like Peyton Tolley or whoever we get into.
Optimizing the roster, that's kind of what they're doing with Brennan Bernardino, right?
He
needed some rest, so let's go take him down to AAA, get him just a few start, get him kind of refreshed, bring him back. Yep. That's kind of what he means.
Cooper Criswell will come back. Like, they'll move arms around. Yep. Now, I don't know that I love that idea, this, like, micromanaging of based on the other team's lineup and who's tired.
This is what they get off to, bro.
Yeah, they may get off to it. You know who else I think gets off to it? The opposing team, because they win. They beat you. They're better. They have guys that they just bring out there night in and night out and know who's going to do the job instead of some Loomerloney Express from Worcester instead of Pawtucket. It seems flawed, Fitzy. Seems flawed. This is why I, in my three-point stance, pushed the P button, the panic button.
Listen, if you are 3-7 in your last 10, 4-8 over your last 12, and playing some of your worst baseball since the middle of the spring as you head into inarguably the most important series of the year, your finger should be near the button that's big red and says PANIC on it.
Yeah. We actually need to get one of those in here. Bob Lobel used to have.
Moby's got one.
Yeah. I need one.
He still got his own one. I'll ask if I can borrow
his. Ask him if we can borrow it, because we need to push it already.
I don't know if you'd use it properly, though. You can't unpanic it the next day.
Oh, yes, you can.
No, you can't.
Yeah, I'm a little Trump-like. I panic, I unpanic, I panic with this direction, panic in that direction.
The wind can't change direction and you unpanic the next day when you hit the panic button.
Anyway, so that was Craig Breslow yesterday. If you want to go back and listen to the whole interview, you can do that on the Audacy app, AUDACY, or you can follow our podcast on iHeart or all the various Spotify, any of the podcast outlets. Yes, Ted Johnson.
Can I give my one little stat nug that I told you in the break?
Yeah, Ted Johnson's been sitting on a stat here that's pretty impressive, boys.
Stat nug.
Stat nug. So the Red Sox in eighth inning, they have bases loaded, right?
Yes.
Bases loaded, no outs. Three consecutive strikeouts. Do you know the last time the Red Sox have done that?
Oh, I'm so sick of the first time in 50 years with this team. But
right? That's been happening all year.
Yeah. The last time for them specifically they did it?
Yeah, to do that.
1977.
Yeah. It's not that bad.
Okay.
2008.
17 years ago.
17 years ago. That's the last
time. Whoa. You know what was also 2008? The former record for the Jimmy Fund Telethon.
That's right, it was.
So they were both
symmetry.
Broken slash matched in the same night. Wow, sports is a crazy
symmetry
world.
Mind blown.
Speaking of crazy, some thought I was crazy to bring up the shower and Craig Breslow. Well, guess what? It was not the first time a shower has been brought up awkwardly by a Boston media member. Up next in Odds and Ends, we have a little recall of the last time someone who was much more famous and popular than I brought up showers on the radio or television. That's next on WEEI.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
WEEI Afternoons, time now for Odds and Ends. Odds and Ends is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Your trusted charity for car donations also accepts donations of boats, RVs, motorcycles, and real estate. Call today, 877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. That's cars with a K. Okay, the boys have had their fun with me because I brought up the shower with Craig Breslow.
Do you do that? Do you look back to the trade deadline and say what coulda, shoulda, even if it's in the shower, I don't know, regret after the game, the ride home?
Okay, so I brought up the shower. I will note that our boss, who we also spoke to cap day one of the Jimmy Fund Telethon, laughed and made fun of me for bringing up the shower with Craig Breslow, Mike Thomas. But this was not the most notable awkward shower comment made in Boston sports media. We hearken back to the late, great Tommy Heinsohn, and I'm sure many of you recall this, but Stiz, roll it.
Took a look at Baines in the shower. He looks like all of Australia. He is really put together.
So that's more awkward than me, right?
I would say so.
Yeah.
But But he wasn't saying it directly to the guy either. Like you
I
were.
I think that's
You're
worse.
4 feet away.
He was like, I saw him in the shower.
The look on Mike Gorman's face. That's the first time I had saw that video. Oh, the look on Gorman's face is priceless.
The ultimate professional, Mike Gorman, and Tommy Heinsohn's this guy's put together in the shower. Like, how do you, Fitzy,
how do you respond
Fitzy,
to that?
You
come back
are
from that when somebody says,
go ahead.
I saw a grown man in the shower, like, admiring his manly member. I mean, come on now.
How do you respond to that as Mike Gorman? Like, what's the appropriate?
There isn't one. There.
Celtics
he looks
down
like
five.
All of Australia. Are you?
Which I also don't really
understand. I've taken a lot of showers, in these big communal showers, and you'll never know, never not once, one of their names that I've ever showered with.
What?
But I've taken a lot of showers with grown men.
You got offended when I said that earlier about somebody. I forgot who it was. I said Ted has showered with the guy.
And I got offended?
A little bit. You told me not to bring that up, I think, anymore.
I don't remember call that.
Which is also a weird world that we...
Well, you don't want to... I don't want to give specifics who I've ever... So if you're saying you showered with a specific person...
No, I'm saying there was
I might deny
I think it was like Willie McGinnis. I was like, Ted even showered with Willie McGinnis.
Nope, never have. Nope. Don't know what you're talking about. Nope.
So if I list the 53-man roster, you'll say no to all of them.
Nope.
Even though I know
never,
the answer is
once.
Yes to most of them. Perfect. Perfect.
As I shake my head up and down. Yep.
Which is another
is
weird
awkward.
Thing. Because, like, why do men shower in massive rooms? Like, when did that become a thing?
Because that's how they designed the shower room.
Well,
when,
I know,
in
but
a
why?
Locker room.
How about they put in stalls?
Yeah, that would be nice,
more
but
money.
They didn't.
Is that what it is?
I would imagine it came down to a financial thing. It's just
cheaper.
Easier.
Bologna
just
sandwiches and communal showers.
Because I don't believe women do that. I believe, like, if you were going to a high school locker room, the boys' shower is a big room and the girls have stalls.
No, they don't. No. No.
I don't know. I might be with you, Andy, on
I'm
that
99%
one.
Sure.
I've never heard.
Nope.
I've never heard of girls talk about communal showers, ever. whether they were like in my era, my daughter's era, but I've heard my son
my
talk about.
My daughter's school has communal showers.
Really?
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Her college?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always heard of like they have a little thing with a shower curtain they pull.
I don't think I could do it.
Do it?
I don't think I could do the communal shower.
Yeah, man.
Nope.
It was a shame. I got to Colorado the first time. I was like, oh boy, this is a new and different experience.
You know? You didn't do it in high school?
Yeah, but it wasn't the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't quite the same.
Yeah, there was more intimidation at Colorado.
It was a step up in weight class.
This is putting the odds and ends.
Cordell Stewart and Michael Westbrook and guys are walking around
I'm
tents
not saying
like,
names.
Holy Rashawn Salaam.
Man.
Where's the showers for guys like me? I'm going to go down the hall somewhere.
Damn.
We should probably move on before we get in trouble. So speaking of trouble, at times it tends to fall around Jaren Duran a little bit. And we had another little incident that I wanted to touch on real quick. Not something I feel the need to take calls on or really debate his character, morals. So we've been talking about bases loaded, no outs, three strikeouts. Well, the first strikeout was Jaren Duran in the eighth inning. And cameras caught him marching back to the dugout, unhappy, obviously. And some fan was unhappy with him. And Jaren Duran expressed, well, bleep you bleep, was basically how it went. Mm-hmm. Do we have any problem with that? I've seen people questioning it, and somebody, I think one of our emails, one of you guys were like, trouble seems to follow around Jaren Duran. He's an emotional guy. I don't really have a problem with this one. This is certainly a far cry from some of the issue he dealt with in the past that got him in trouble. This is an emotional guy who reacted and said, is it that big a deal?
It's not, but when you factor in all the other things, you know, and if something happens again down the road, then I'll look at what happened last night, you know, with a more, you know, kind of fine-tooth comb. But if it's a one-off, then fine. But if it's the beginning of something else, then I'll look at it a little closer.
And Fitzy, we also don't have any idea what was said to him. We've gone down that road before, too, because of his revelations of what he's gone through with his mental health and his personal history. There are some people out there that are probably going to throw that his way and have thrown that his way as barbs. Yep. But this, to me...
I'd rather he not fire back, honestly, at this point now.
Yeah, he probably would, too. But in the heat of the moment, when he just struck out with the bases loaded, fired back. And those of us that have short fuses at times and sometimes speak before we think know how that can be. Sometimes you regret it, but it's also... Mm-hmm. Tough
but he runs hot.
He does.
And maybe that's
he does.
What brings his energy out. So I just, you know, he can be just as harsh on himself as he can with
fans. So. Yeah. No, I think he's emotional good, emotional bad. Yeah, they love him, the whole thing. They had the lookalike contest over the weekend. Yep. It felt like there's a lot to Jaren Duran, but if this is the worst thing he does moving forward, then it's a minor blip on the radar. Christian Arkand, how
are
we doing?
I'm good. Joe Braverman won that contest, by the way. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Did you really?
Joe Braverman, the number one Jaren Duran lookalike in Boston.
No, he didn't.
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
You didn't know that?
He doesn't look anything like him.
I know. I didn't really think so either, but he won the contest.
Did no one else show up?
I've heard Joe Braverman is someone you don't want to shower with.
Yeah, he's intimidating to shower as well.
Yeah?
Like Stiz.
I think at this point, if you're at a game, you know, you're paying. Everyone's like, oh, you can't do that to a paying customer. If you're a paying customer to a Red Sox game, you got to know by now, if you yell something at Jaren Duran, there's like an 80% chance he's going to yell something back at you. Now, what I'm mostly worried about is that he's going to get suspended for doing this over and over again and miss time here in a crucial part of the season. So he's got to get this under control, whatever this thing is. I run hot too, Andy, so do you. We managed not to get kicked off the air for it, you know?
No, you too? No.
Stop telling me these lies.
And if this be, and the other issue is you said, like, fans know he runs hot, and if they want to instigate, they know they're going to get the reaction.
Opposing fans, too.
And especially, or anybody who's frustrated that had seven beers by the time the eighth inning ran around or whatever. So, it's not ideal, I'll say that. But if you're going to take the total package that everybody said you can't trade Jaren Duran, he's the heartbeat of the club, and everybody would be so mad, well... The emotion goes with it, good and bad. So you got 4 hours tonight. What are we?
Sure do.
What are we talking about?
Breslow in the shower? We'll talk about that for sure.
Have you ever showered with Craig Breslow?
Every night, no. 7:30, we'll be joined by Gordo, who I've also never showered with. We have the headlines at 6:30, this realignment expansion thing. I think Rob Manfred's lost his mind. And we'll have a lot of Patriots to get to as well. Nightly news, all the good stuff. Dongs, 9:30, dongs.
Oh, dongs.
And it's a Wednesday, so there's a lot of games. So we should have a healthy, healthy dong total tonight. A
lot of dongs from the lookalike to Jaren Duran, Joe Braverman, which... Still don't see it, but I'll believe whoever voted for that or gave out the award. Stick around the Christian Arkand Show, 6 to 10, full show He's going to run hot. I feel it. I don't know what it's going to be, but at some point, talking about Jarren Duran or something else, he's going to go off the rails, and that's the beauty of Christian Arkan. We'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 6, Fitzy, Ted Johnson, Andy Hart, and I'm going to go home and watch a movie because Ted yelled at me, and Ted's big, and Ted said watch a movie, so that's what I'll do with No Sox game tonight. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Up next in Odds and Ends, we have a little recall of the last time someone who was much more famous and popular than I brought up showers on the radio or television. That's next on WEEI.
Nailed it.